We're going to get into it, our featured story. It's all about this Trump interview. And man, guys, this is not good. I guess we'll just cut right to the chase. We'll get into these remarks. I'll read them to you. This is really bad. And I guess I would start by saying this. I want everybody to take a moment here and try to remember what you felt like when Trump won the election exactly a year ago. So Trump won the election, what, November 5th last year? So it's about a year and a week ago. And do you remember the exuberance of that night? The hype? How excited everybody was. Trump wins in a landslide. He wins the popular vote. And it wasn't just that he won. Remember the sentiment. The sentiment was, it will be different this time. They said, it will be different this time. Golden age. It's going to be a golden age. A truly golden age. You're going back. You're going back, they said. You have 50 days until all illegals will be deported. Remember this? They said, we're going to cut the deficit by $2 trillion. Remember Elon Musk was in the White House? Yeah, you forgot. It got memory hold. Remember Doge? Department of Government Efficiency, like the meme coin? We're going to cut $2 trillion from the deficit. We're going to deport millions of people. We're going to eliminate the Department of Education. We're going to build the wall. We're going to end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. Remember? Everybody thought it was going to be Trump and Vivek and Elon and Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. dancing to Staying Alive while they shrank the government and, you know, introduced the golden age and everything would be great. Remember this? Those are the vibes coming in to the election. You might recall, I did not vote. I did not vote at all. I didn't tell people to vote for Kamala. I didn't vote for Kamala. I didn't vote for Trump either. I told people to recuse themselves. Why? Because I anticipated every single thing that happened this year. I told you exactly how it was going to go and why. And when I started to notice this was roughly around May, during the election last year, when Nikki Haley went to Israel on Trump's behalf, dropped out of the primary, which was ongoing, and endorsed him, and then Miriam Adelson promised to cut him a check for $100 million. That's when I knew something was up. Because Trump did not secure Haley's exit from the race and endorsement and the commitment from Miriam Adelson without some sort of quid pro quo, without a deal. He cut another deal. And then about a month later in June, Trump was on the All In podcast with David Sacks after he visited his house in San Francisco for a fundraiser where Silicon Valley poured millions into his campaign. That was another red flag. And during that All In appearance on the podcast, he said we were going to staple green cards to diplomas. The age-old policy that never seems to die. They promised they're going to give permanent residency to every foreign student that graduates from any degree program in the United States. Horrible open borders, America last policy. It was those two things, but there were others too. Those were the first major things that made me say, you know what? This is not going to be different. It's going to be exactly like the first term. They're going to make all the same mistakes. Same personnel mistakes. They don't have a plan. They're not organized. They're selling out. I knew it then. And so I told people, look, you're not going to get mass deportations. You're not going to get America First immigration policy. You're going to get a war with Iran. They're not going to be able to end this war in Ukraine. Like none of the things they're promising are actually going to come true. And people told me I was a Democrat. Brutal. People said, you're a Democrat infiltrator. They said I was working for Kamala. They said I took a deal to get out of prosecution for January 6th. And the deal was that, you know, if the FBI didn't charge me, that I would help the Democrats win the election. Like, that's what they were saying about me. Because I predicted everything correctly. You know, fast forward to the election, people said, oh man, plan trusters are in control. We win. It's going to be different this time. And then one thing after the other. First, they pick a cabinet of all neocons. Matt Gaetz drops out of Congress, isn't the attorney general. We get Rubio for state. We get Ratcliffe at the CIA. We get Waltz at the National Security Council. He's working for Israel. Then on Christmas, Trump isn't even inaugurated. And on Christmas, we have a full-fledged meltdown from Vivek and Elon saying, if you don't like H-1B visas, you're a racist. And we're going to kick you out of the Republican Party. And you're a cancer and you're scum. That was on Christmas. And it went on and on and on like this. The failure to carry out the mass deportations, the multiple visits from Israel, bombing Iran, the burying of the Epstein files, the carve outs for farm workers, the corporate tax, one thing after the next. This is where I want to start. Let's recap how we got here. We came into this second term with high hopes. And again, the excitement, the hype, the promises. And the central idea was, it will be different this time, they said. Trump will finish the job. He's going to actually put America first. All you have to do is vote one more time. Ignore the haters. Ignore the skeptics. Just vote one more time. It's going to be awesome. Well, here we are. And we have this interview from Laura Ingraham. She's at Fox News. She interviews Trump. This is a week after the first major election since the Trump victory. This is the off-year election, the governor's races in New Jersey and Virginia, mayoral election in New York City. First major test. How's Trump doing? It's a blowout for the Democrats. Democratic socialist becomes mayor of New York City. Republicans do about 10 points worse in New Jersey, lose by double digits in Virginia. Even in Virginia, a statewide official wins after text messages come out where he's talking about killing Republicans. He somehow wins too. It's a bloodbath. It's, you know, no pun intended, it's brutal. And why do Democrats win? They win in part because of the shutdown in Virginia, northern Virginia, where people are affected because they work for the government or government contractors. But also because the vibes are off. People have a feeling that things are not going well, in particular with the economy. Prices remain high. Homeowners insurance remains high. Healthcare insurance is very high. Health insurance, I should say, is very high. And although inflation has stabilized, it's still a little high. Interest rates are still high. And the prices have not come down. At the same time, the job market's very bad. And so Americans are getting squeezed. There's a lot of signs that the economy is okay. It's chugging along, but there's also a lot of reasons to be worried. There's a lot of credit card debt. It seems that Americans are basically insolvent. Wealth is down. Everybody's feeling it. Everybody's feeling these cumulative effects of the inflation of the past 5 years, as well as the interest rates. It's been tough. So here we are a week after this blowout election. Republicans are losing because the economy sucks. And Trump comes out in the interview and he defends. He's given an opportunity. This is like a layup. This is a softball. Laura Ingraham serves it up. She says, so what do you think actually about the Chinese students? Which at one point it was said Trump was going to ban Chinese students from coming here altogether. All Chinese students would be barred from entering the country, and that was part of the trade war. That sounded good. And Trump did a 180. He said, actually, we're going to bring twice as many Chinese students in. Then he said, well, no, that's not what we meant. So Laura Ingraham asked him to clarify. This is what happened. This is from Fox News. It says, quote, President Trump on Monday defended his administration's plan to offer 600,000 visas to Chinese students. Laura Ingraham pressed him during an interview questioning how the proposal was MAGA if it crowded out spots, excuse me, if it crowded out spots for American students and whether universities were getting rich from Chinese money. Trump argued that foreign students are actually vital to keeping U.S. universities financially stable. He said, quote, we do have a lot of people coming in from China. We always have China and other countries. We have a massive system of colleges and universities. And if we were to cut that in half, which perhaps makes some people happy, you would have half the colleges in the United States. They would go out of business, he said. He said, I actually think it's good to have outside countries. Look, I want to be able to get along with the world, not with the French, though, he said. Laura Ingraham said, but the Chinese, they spy on us. They steal our intellectual property. Trump said, you think the French are better? Ingraham said, yeah, obviously. Trump said, I'm not so sure, citing French tariffs. He said, it's not that I want them, but I view it as a business. One thing you don't want is to cut half of the people, half of the students from all over the world and destroy our entire university and college system. I don't want to do that. The remarks mark a reversal from earlier this year when the Trump administration said it would aggressively revoke Chinese student visas amid espionage concerns. In August, Trump changed course and announced plans to expand the program dramatically. More than 277,000 Chinese students studied in the United States last year, according to the Institute of International Education. Now it's going to be 600,000. Okay? Pay attention to what Trump says here. He says, first of all, he says, I could cut the number of Chinese students in half and make some people happy, he said. But think of the universities. Then what would happen? That's one. Two, he said, I look at it as a business. It's a business. It's all about money. We need the Chinese money. So when Trump says that cutting the number of Chinese students would make some people happy, who do you think those people are exactly? It's his voters. When Trump says, well, you know, I could cut the number of Chinese students coming into America, I suppose that would make some people happy. He's referring to his voters who voted for him to do this. Your voters, the forgotten men and women of America, voted for you to do that, to put American students, their children, or themselves, ahead of the universities, which are run by our enemies, by the way. Academia is run by the left. Academia is run by liberals. Democrats, they do not support Trump or his government or Republicans. Universities are notorious for this. And Chinese students. So Trump says, well, I guess I could make you happy by doing what I promised. I guess I could make my voters happy by doing what I promised to do. But think about all the money. Think about the Chinese students and think about all the money that would go to the universities. I don't know. I think that it would actually be a good thing if we had fewer colleges and universities. If colleges and universities cannot exist without foreign money, then they shouldn't. Isn't that a simple and basic principle? We have too many colleges. We have too many college graduates. It's devaluing a college diploma. And by the way, the job market is frozen. You have a very high percentage of Americans with a college degree, but a much smaller percentage of them that actually have a job in the field that they got an education in. So if you have all these universities and all these students graduating and entering a very tight job market, if they can't exist without that arrangement, which is America last, let them go out of business. Let them go out of business. Or better yet, let them economize. Maybe instead of spending all this money on state-of-the-art amenities and sports facilities and recreational facilities, I don't know, maybe you need to cut those things. Maybe you need to eliminate some of the programs there. But the whole point, that's beside the point. The whole point of electing Trump in the first place is that you're supposed to put Americans and their concerns first. And it goes without saying, if a Chinese student goes to Harvard or Yale, that is one less spot for an American. There are only so many spaces at elite schools. There's only so many seats there at elite public and private schools on the East Coast, the West Coast, everywhere in between, research universities, liberal arts universities. There's only so many spots. And if there are 600,000 Chinese students coming here, those are 600,000 seats that don't go to Americans. And I understand that maybe it's flexible, give or take 100 or 1,000 in a particular university. But if you're doubling the amount of Chinese students, if we're talking about 500,000 in a given year, there are Americans who won't be going to college this year because a Chinese student is. And the reason that we elected Trump in the first place in 2016 was to reverse those priorities and say, what about those American students, actually? What about American human capital? What about Americans that have talents? America has a huge pool of highly skilled labor, or I should say human capital, with a high IQ, who are able to be educated, able to be trained, able to work in skilled fields. America has one of the highest in terms of the index of human capital. We rank among the highest out of all the countries in the world. Surely we have the talent. Surely we have the people. What about those kids? Isn't that the whole point? Isn't why their parents voted for Trump? Isn't that why they voted for Trump? So, you know, they would have the opportunity to go to college. And then, by the way, let's not forget where this leads. The whole point of going to the most selective college is so that you can be the most competitive in the job market. And at a time where entry-level positions in the best fields are scarce, at a time when the labor market is very tight, there's not a lot of firing, but there's also not a lot of hiring going on, people are looking for any way to get a leg up. And so if you're taking away those seats at colleges for students, you're also really taking away a very good livelihood for them too. It's not just that Chinese students are coming here to study, they're coming here to work. They're coming here to get a degree, and then they're going to get in the optional training program, and then they're going to get a job straight out of college. You're going to get one of the better jobs. You're going to get a STEM job. That's a job that could have then gone to an American. That's a lifetime. The whole American dream is you study hard, your parents pay high property taxes to send you to a good public high school where there aren't gang wars and black people getting in fights so that you can go to a good college. They pay for an SAT tutor. They pay for extracurriculars so you can get into a good college. You're supposed to then go to college, pay an arm and a leg for a good degree, and then you get a leg up and you get to enter into the workforce as a professional, get a nice white-collar job with a high salary, with good benefits, and then you get to get married. You get a big enough job in a competitive field, in a high-paying field. You're able to buy a home, get a wife, start a family. That's the deal. And that's how somebody goes from working class or lower middle class to upper middle class. Or you get to be rich. That's the deal. That's the program. That's what it means to be America first, is to think of those people in Iowa, those people in Kansas, those people in South Dakota, wherever, and in California, New York too. But it's thinking about Americans going to college to get jobs, to start families, to own homes, to lead good lives, to actually have prosperity in the American dream. That's the whole point. And Trump says, yeah, well, you know, I could put them first. I guess that would make them happy. But what about the colleges? The colleges would go out of business. Yeah, so what? I don't even think that's true. That's hyperbole. That's totally overstating it. Half the colleges would not go out of business. I don't know that any college would go out of business. They just have to change their business model. Maybe they'd make it more affordable. And by the way, if the colleges go bankrupt, then just have the government bail them out. God knows the government can bail out Ukraine. The government can bail out Israel. The government can bail out Argentina. The government can bail out the banks. But you're telling me, who is going to foot the bill for the universities? American students. You can't go to college because a rich Chinese oligarch's kid has to keep the universities afloat, because otherwise the colleges will go out of business. I don't even have a problem with that. But if that's what you're saying, why can't we just bail them out? Once again, Americans always drawing the short end of the stick. Every single time. The special interests are never allowed to draw the short end of the stick. If Argentina's in trouble, if Israel's in trouble, if Ukraine's in trouble, if Silicon Valley's in trouble, if the banks and Wall Street are in trouble, here comes the government to bail you out. Not a problem. Oh, the universities might fail if we let Americans go there? Oh, well, too bad. I guess you're not going to college this year. We have to bring in the Chinese to pay for our stuff. Really? This is the kind of thinking which is why we voted for Trump in the first place. And now it's business as usual. And by the way, this is actually worse than Biden. Like, think about it. When Joe Biden was president, he tried to eliminate student loan debt. That helped Americans. He said, here's a wild idea. Let's just wipe the slate clean and let's have all those students that took on student loan debt, let's take the debt away. Let's just forgive it. Let's have the taxpayers pay for it. And conservatives flipped out. They said, you can't do that. That's not constitutional. And, you know, I sort of agree with the constitutional argument. It was overreach. But they disagreed with it in principle. They said, the taxpayer can't bail you out because you made a bad decision. I think Ben Shapiro literally said that. Ben Shapiro said, if you made the decision to take on student loan debt, the taxpayer can't bail you out. Really? So when Israel starts a war with Iran, then we have to bail them out? Again, it's like Americans always drawing the short end of the stick. It gets to the point where literally Democrats, as dumb as they are, and I'm not a socialist. I don't support a lot of these policies. But in terms of the mindset behind it, the administration under the Democrats said, we're going to help Americans. You have student loan debt. It's a high payment. Maybe you're paying it off 10 years after you graduated. It's forgiven. Republicans get in and they say, we're going to double the number of Chinese students. Really? So who are you really working for here? That's the first thing that he said. Then the second thing that he said, it gets better. He was asked about H-1B visas. H-1B visas come from the 1990 Immigration Act, and everybody knows this is a scam. H-1B was intended, or at least nominally, they said, ostensibly, the goal of H-1B was to fill jobs that require specialized skills that firms could not find Americans to fill those jobs. What it has become is effectively just cheap foreign labor. It's indentured servitude. They bring in an Indian. They have an American train the Indian. Then they fire the American. They hire the Indian. The Indian works for half the wage. And the Indian can't go and work anywhere else because they rely on the employer to remain in America. So it's like they're indentured to the employer. They're cheaper. There's less regulations. That's what it has become. It's basically become a subsidy for Silicon Valley in particular, but big firms in general, and we're underwriting their labor cost, replacing Americans with Indians. This is what Trump had to say about this. Laura Ingraham asks him, H-1B visa, will that be a big priority for you? If you want to raise wages for Americans, you can't flood the country with hundreds of thousands of foreign workers. Trump replies, you have to bring in the talent. She says, well, we have plenty of talented people here. Trump said, no, you don't. No, you don't have talented Americans. He says, you don't have certain talents. People have to learn. You can't take people off the unemployment line and say, go make missiles. Laura Ingraham says, how did we do it before? Trump said, I'll give you an example. In Georgia, we raided Hyundai for illegal immigrants. They had people from South Korea. They had 500 to 600 people. Early stages to make batteries, to teach people how to do it. Well, they wanted to kick them out of the country. You need them. You can't bring in $10 billion for a plant, take people off the unemployment line, and start making missiles. It doesn't work that way. So that being a non sequitur aside, once again, this is just the next stage. So first they take the seats at the advanced universities from Americans. Then they take the best jobs. Then they take the best STEM jobs. No, you can't go to college. That's for the Chinese. No, you can't get a tech job. That's for the Indians. That's for the South Koreans. That's for Asians and immigrants from other countries. Americans can't do those jobs. Really? So, hey, what jobs can we do? Americans apparently can't go to universities. And Americans also, they won't do the low-skill jobs that the Mexicans do. They also won't do the high-skill jobs that the Asians can do. They refuse to do the low-skill jobs that the dumb peasants from Central America do because they're lazy and they just can't work with their hands. And they're not able to do the high-skill jobs that the Asians do because they're stupid. You can't take them out of the unemployment line and teach them to make missiles. And by the way, both of these things are not true. Of course you can do that. Of course you can. When ICE raided a meatpacking plant in, I think it was Kansas, and they rounded up all the illegals and detained them, the following day, there was a line going around the building. There, the entire lobby of the meatpacking plant was filled, and there was a line wrapped around the building of people applying for jobs. Of course Americans will do the jobs. You got to train them. It costs money, and it takes time. You got to train them up, but of course they'll do those jobs. And as far as the STEM jobs go, you probably have about 40% of college graduates, 18 to 40, that have a STEM degree. How many of them are working in a STEM field? I think it's like 15%. So it's not just that you have unemployment, you have underemployment. You have maybe half of the people that have STEM jobs that are not, or excuse me, that have STEM degrees, they're not working in STEM jobs. Of course you can train them to make missiles. Instead of having Americans train H-1B visa workers to take their job, have the H-1B visa workers train Americans to take their job. It's a no-brainer. Of course you can do. And this is what's missing in the government that we thought we were getting from Trump. And by the way, this actually goes towards the whole thing about Joseph Stalin. Why do I like Stalin in some ways? Super controversial, I know. Because if you read anything about the industrialization of the Soviet Union, it's incredible. These communists, as horrible and barbaric as they were, they would get on trains and they would go to factories and they would literally build factories from nothing. The actual politicians would do it. The actual politicians, they didn't know how to do anything. But they bootstrapped and they got on trains, they went out there and they just made towns that made tanks and planes and they stole the secrets from the United States and they just did it. And it was super inefficient and criminal and they used slave labor to do it. Like, I'm not co-signing the methods, but there was this spirit. There was a spirit there. There was a spirit in Germany also. There was also a spirit like this in America. It was a different time where people just said, we will do it. And we thought we were getting that with Trump. That's, by the way, what Make America Great Again means. The whole idea of Make America Great Again is this idea that the country is stuck. The country can't do anything. The government has no efficacy. The government can't solve problems, and neither can the private sector. It seems like our country is dying, and basically people are unable to stop it. People are either apathetic and they don't care, or people are inept and they're not competent enough. And it seems like the whole country's falling off the cliff and no one is able to even do anything. And we're looking at these energetic countries with tons of young people, whether it's in the Middle East or it's in Asia. We look at cities like Dubai. We look at cities like Singapore. We look at Beijing, Hong Kong. And people say, why can't we build things like they're building in China? Why can't, in China, they build bridges, they build things. We can't build anything. In Dubai, they build like world wonders and it's peaceful. In Chicago and New York, it's a shithole. It's dirty. There's crime everywhere. It smells like weed. You can't build anything. And the whole idea of Trump getting into office is that we would get the energy back. We would get this initiative back. That's what Make America Great Again meant. And yes, the aesthetics of MAGA had in it, you know, I'm not a socialist, but this idea of like heavy industry, like factories making stuff, like Americans would be drafted not to go and fight in the Middle East, but literally drafted to build shit in America. You're going to get a job, you're going to work, and we're literally going to make things. We're going to make our country great. We're going to build skyscrapers, bridges, infrastructure. We're going to work with our hands. We're going to have factories. We're going to be a productive nation that builds the future. That was the whole premise. And Americans would do it. It was that Americans would do the building, not Chinese, not Indians, not foreign labor, not outsourcing. American labor, American builders, buying American, hiring American, American ingenuity and entrepreneurship and innovation and labor and companies would literally create our future. That was the idea of MAGA. And that's inspiring, the idea that everybody would be drafted behind a common vision that we can all get behind, which is greatness, which we had, but which we have lost. This kind of momentum and initiative that we had, but we lost. We're an aging country. We're slowing down. We're in the twilight or the autumn of our time period as an empire and as a civilization. And people said, people would come forward from the Midwest, from flyover country, from the heartland, and they would go forward to DC to work in government, and they'd be part of this transformation. The factories would return and people would go to the factories and they would build things. They'd make fucking cars. They would make airports. They would make bridges. We would build new cities, literally, and have kids and build houses. Like, yeah, we can do it. That was the idea. We can do it. And now here we are 10 years later and the message is the opposite. You can't do it. We're not talented. We don't have the talent because you can't. We need immigrants. We need Venezuelans to do Uber. We need Salvadorians to pick the grapes. We need Indians to do our programming. We need Koreans to build our missiles. Like now we're getting the opposite. Trump 2016 was like, I don't care. We're going to win. We're going to take the country and make it great and nothing will stop us. We're going to cut the red tape, ignore the media. We're not going to take donor money and we're just going to fucking do it. Like that was the idea. And now here we are 10 years later and the message is like, we can't do anything. Politics is too difficult. It's political reality. I could send all the Chinese and illegal farmers home and I guess that would make some people happy, but what are you going to do? Let the colleges go out of business? We don't have any talent here. We need Indians to do our jobs for us. And that. It's less so the policy, because look, people are realistic. People know Rome wasn't built in a day. We want to build Rome in like 20 years, but it wasn't built in a day. Okay. But what is really crushing after 10 years is the message. And it's like Trump is getting old. His movement is getting old. America's getting old. And it feels like as Trump loses energy, as he has been defeated in a way, it feels like the movement is being defeated. The movement that he built is just, it's out of ideas. It's out of steam. We tried it. We thought we could do it. We can't. We gave it one last try, one last push. Make America great again. Let's do it. Never mind. Everyone go home. We actually do need the Indians. We lost. We were wrong. The elites were right. We're worthless. We need Chinese money. We need Indian programmers. That's the sense of dread. And this is why I said a year ago, it really is about the vibes. I said this a year ago. Trump is old. He's tired. He's not funny. He's low energy. He's monotonous. I said, and his movement is dead. Like, his movement is not dynamic. His movement has been captured. Look at who's at Mar-a-Lago. It's all grifters. When Trump started, it was all true believers. When Trump started, it was like him and like a dozen people with a dream. And they were bootstrapping it. They were just doing these rallies, flying by the seat of their pants. And they're like, can we win? I don't know. We're going to try. And all the careerists and all of the parasite political class, they hated Trump. Now they're all in Mar-a-Lago. Now Mar-a-Lago is just the king's court. And it's all ass kissers and brown nosers and grifters and shills and the worst people imaginable. His endorsements have become a business. Access to him, photos with him have become a business. Like, all of the shills from 15 are now on the inside. All the people that hated MAGA are now the biggest MAGA supporters. Trump has been fully assimilated. He has fully been compromised by the GOP. And there's nothing risky, nothing edgy. There's no entrepreneurial spirit. Look what happened to Elon Musk. Elon Musk came in. He was maybe the last push because he's a little younger and he bought Twitter and, you know, he's the rocket man and everything like that. Elon came in with Doge. He got chewed up and spit out in 3 months. Elon was a little bit of energy, like, you know, he was kind of like a little shock therapy for MAGA. And he lasted 3 months. He said, we're going to come in and we're going to bring in all these young guys and we're just going to move fast and break things. We could just do things. Remember, that was just, we could just do things. We're going to cut $1 trillion from the deficit. He got chewed up and spit out in 3 months. And now look at where we are. Nothing that has been promised has come to fruition. Can we end the wars? No. Trump wants to go back to Afghanistan. We're bombing Iran. We're building a base in Gaza. Mass deportations, Trump says, not so fast. We actually need all the people. We need the illegal farm workers. We need the illegal hospitality workers. We need the illegal construction workers. We're going to shut down H-1Bs, foreign students. Not so fast. We need all those Asians to fund our universities and do all the jobs that Americans are too retarded to do. Cut the deficit, forget about it. Epstein files, they don't exist. Can't afford a home? Well, get lost. Here we are a year in, your golden age. And it was rotten from the start because the donors got involved. And you have to understand that these things go hand in hand. When Trump started, he was not surrounded by the money. When Trump started, he funded his primary campaign with like $70 million. And it was just him and a small staff. And he was on Twitter and that was it. And that's why it was energetic. That's why it was daring and risk-taking and exciting. And what happened really right after he won the election the first time in 17 and 18 is that all of the interests surrounded him, the money, the shills, the personnel, the bureaucrats. And the second that happened, they poisoned the well. And suddenly it became cautious and conventional and boring and safe. And suddenly it became about everyone getting a handout. It suddenly became about patronage. Everybody getting their back scratched, everybody getting taken care of under the table. Israel lobby, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, the corporate tax cuts, moving the embassy. It became about everything other than the people. These things go hand in hand. And this is what I said last year. Like, all of these ideas that we talk about on the show, about personnel, about the Israel lobby, about the Trump campaign, about why things aren't happening, quickly or at all. All these things are deeply related. If the Heritage Foundation is controlled by Israel lobbyists, if the Republican Party is controlled by the Israel lobby and the interests, if they're policing the young people and the speech, if they're working for the donors and the rich, then you're never going to get the good policy. You're never going to get your American revival. They're fucking killing our country. Every time the president of the United States says we have to take care of the universities before the young people, we have to take care of Hyundai and the South Koreans before we train up our own workforce, they're killing our country. They're murdering our country in order to satisfy all the special interests and give the political kickbacks. We're literally murdering our country. And the whole idea behind Trumpism is that we could transcend the petty politics, the wheeling and dealing, the quid pro quo, the money power. The idea was if we could transcend that, if we could have the people elect one leader, and if he wasn't beholden to the interests, he could get in, hire the right people, and just fix it. And everybody'd be unhappy. The media'd be pissed. Everybody'd be pissed. There'd be pain and economic pain and maybe chaos. But with a firm hand and with consistency and with leadership, that we could actually revive the country. We would have to break the back of all these self-perpetuating systems that have gotten us to this point. That was the whole idea. That's what made it interesting and exciting and worth supporting. And the second that it backslid into everything that came before, that's when I jumped off. That's when I said, I'm out. But all the idiots stuck around because, you know, a lot of them, they just caught on way too late. A lot of people got red-pilled in like 2021. A lot of the people that voted for Trump in 24, they became conservative after the pandemic. They weren't there for the first time. And so their support for Trump is just like a generic conservatism. It's like a generic reaction to the excesses of the left. And so they weren't there for that magical campaign. They weren't there for that populist moment. And that's why they were sold a bunch of crap by propagandists on Twitter who were telling them it's going to be a never-ending Creed concert. We're going to be drinking Code Red Mountain Dew and playing Xbox, and it's going to be the golden age. You know, Vivek Ramaswamy and Tulsi Gabbard are going to put America first or whatever. Like they were just not prepared for that. And now here we are. I was right. I told you so. This is not MAGA. There is nothing MAGA about any of this. This is not America first. None of this is putting Americans first. Every promise has been broken. There are no real victories. Trump has not delivered. It has been one disappointment after another, and that is because of corruption. That is because the Trump regime, just like every other regime, has been corrupted by money. That's the bottom line. You have been disappointed. You fell for it again. You believed them when they made a promise, which they never intended to keep. They said things to you to get your vote, knowing full well that once they got it, they were going to work for the donors. That's who pays for the cabinet appointments and the ambassadorships. That's who captures the bureaucracy. And that is why the system is sclerotic. That is why the system is slow and broken and unanswerable to the people and not even thinking about the people. And you're almost better off with Biden than with this. This is just like criminal stuff. And I'm not saying I'm six of one, half a dozen of the other. I don't care. But all Trump seems to have done, he's just as bad as the Democrats. The only difference is Trump has given people a false sense of victory. Trump has lulled people into complacency. Everybody thought the people triumphed when Trump won. He's different. He's talking like the rest of us. That's what is particularly sinister about the Trump movement, is the way that it functions as a Trojan horse. Biden was worse. Kamala would have been worse. But at least with Kamala, nobody would be under any illusions. Would Kamala be better? No, she would have been far worse. The economy would be worse. Immigration would be worse. It all would be worse. But here's what matters, and here's the difference. Nobody would be under any illusions about what it is. That it's illegitimate. The elections are fake. The government's corrupt. She's not really in charge. The system hates us. There'd be no love lost there. And everybody would be acutely aware of the problem. You'd have righteous indignation. You'd have anger. There'd be a revolutionary fervor. But instead, with Trump, you get the pressure release valve. And no matter what he says or what he does, 50% of his audience, you know, he has this diehard base of supporters. They'll support it no matter what. If he bombs Iran, they'll support it. If he brings in 500,000 Chinese students, they'll say he doesn't really mean it. If he fails to deport people, they'll say, well, who cares? The border's secure. So what? That's the problem. And so this is when you start to begin to think politically and start to think about what our real end game is. My end game is not to elect Republicans and be marginally better than the Democrats. No, my end game is I do want an energetic president. I want an energetic, forward-thinking, progressive, disruptive, populist executive branch that is going to fucking break the back of the power in the country and put Americans first. No more kickbacks, no more deals, no more corruption, no more special interests, no more super PACs. We literally need a leader to, a real leader that is actually popular and in control with agency, someone smart, to get in, fire everybody, bring in his own people, and literally make the trains run on time. Literally build the new cities, raise the skyscrapers from the ground, build the factories, put us on a war footing, make the fucking country great again. That's all I'm interested in. If it's not that, I don't want it. So don't tell me the next best thing is this. The next best thing is we're going to elect Trump and he's going to make another joke about how you say Buttigieg's name. We're going to elect Trump and, hey man, it's better than the Democrats. I don't care. They're murdering our country. On what timeline? Are we going to murder the country in 10 years or 5 years? You're still murdering the country. Trump promised to be that leader. He's not. It's time to move on. Now, you can vote Republican. I don't care. But if you are not dedicating yourself as a young person to getting yourself ready for that truly revolutionary moment, then you're just not engaging in politics. That's why I tell people, get ready. Get ready for the moment when that revolutionary leader appears and says, we need factory workers. We need workshops. Someone needs to make the missiles. Someone needs to make the tanks, the cars. Someone needs to make the steel that will build the buildings. That's why I tell people, go to college, get skills, get jobs, be a human Swiss Army knife. Be a spy, be a soldier. Because when that revolutionary government comes to power, we want to go to DC and rule. And for those that can't do that, we want you to be able to go and start a workshop and make the country different. We need energy. We need productivity. We need to build. We need to expand. It's not about electing some Republican government so they could overturn the civil rights law and DEI or whatever. Like, who cares? As long as they're bringing in millions of Asians every year, as long as everything stays the same. So that's the essence of the disappointment. And this is where Israel First and Trump are going down together. They're going down holding hands because they're inextricably connected. Israel First, Ben Shapiro, and tired, low-energy Trump, they're both going down the tubes together. This is a movement that is no longer talking to Americans, doesn't care about Americans, doesn't put Americans first. and it's finished. When Trump goes out and says, you know, well, I could cut the number of Chinese students in half, and maybe that'd make people happy, but I'm not going to. You're not talking to Americans anymore. You forgot Americans. You're putting them last again. You're not fighting for them, but you're still answering to Mark Levin and Shapiro. Well, you can have them. This movement is over. And now the question is, what comes next? Trumpism is over. I hate to inform you, this administration is done. Stick a fork in it. It's fucking over. We played this game. It's deja vu. I was there for the first term, and I remember right up until 2020, I was saying, okay, you know, we could still make a difference. I remember in like spring 2020, I was coping. Trust me when I tell you, it's over. We're out of time, okay? Because it's Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving in 2 weeks. It's Christmas a month after that. Then it's the midterms. You think they're going to do mass deportations and federal control of Chicago during the midterms? You think Putin's going to end the war during the midterms? They're not. Okay? We're going to get slaughtered in the midterms. Democrats are going to control the House, and then they're going to shut the White House down. Things are going to get worse, not better. This administration, Trump is getting worse. He's 80 years old. The people are terrible. Kristi Noem is a fucking idiot, and she's running DHS. It's not going to happen. And then in 2027, the whole cabinet is going to run for president. Congratulations, Trump. You filled up your cabinet with people that don't care about America. They just want to be president. And in 2027, 2 months after the midterms, half the cabinet is going to announce their run for the presidency. J.D. Vance, Vice President, Mark Rubio, Secretary of State, Kristi Noem, Secretary of DHS, maybe RFK Jr., HHS. You think they're going to be able to make America great again when half the cabinet is running for president and Democrats control Congress and they're impeaching Trump? Never going to happen. It's over. And I told you it would happen like this exactly. I said, no mass deportations, H-1Bs, you're getting a war with Iran. I said, they're not going to bring in the right personnel. They're going to stall. They're not going to hit the ground running because they have no plan. They're disorganized. They're going to blow a whole year. And if they do that, then you don't have as much time as you think. They'll run out the clock. It will happen as I said, and then it'll be 2028 before you know it. And it has come to pass. This is your golden age. All you plan trusters coping and seething, fuck you. All you people, John Doyle, Patrick Casey, Jack Posobiec, Zero HP Lovecraft, Bronze Age Pervert, all you fucking cocksucking Jews, and stupid true goyim that told us, that's a throwaway remark. Don't trust the plan doubters and the disloyal. Hey, Patriot, we're trusting the plan. Fuck you. You were wrong and you have ruined the country as a result. I told you exactly what would happen. It was obvious for anyone with eyes to see, but you're so stupid you didn't see it. And now we're fucked. Now the movement is dead. This administration is finished. It's over. And now the question is, what happens next? This is why I say, and I tell Alex Jones, every time I get on Alex Jones' show, he's like, so what are we going to do? We're still rooting for Trump, right? We got to tell him. I'm like, tell him what? Tell him what? Don't fuck over American workers? I think he knows what he's doing. You know, he's not listening to us on Twitter, bro. And we played this game in the first term. We're 10 years in. And you still have these people, I hate to say it, but they're just like in denial. And they're like, okay, everybody, let's all go on Twitter and let's tell Trump, don't screw over your voters. Okay. hey, Trump, don't hire John Ratcliffe in the CIA. Like, what are we doing? We lost. It's over. The time to make demands was during the election when he needed the votes. He's a lame duck president and he doesn't need anything from us. He's not even on Twitter. He's on Truth Social. So what are you talking about? We're going to all rally and tell him, don't hire yet another neocon? Forget it. We tried that. I'm not playing that game anymore. Trump sold us out. He is the problem. He's cooked. And you know what? Look, I'm not saying damn him to hell. I think he's a net positive. His movement was necessary, but it was never the end all be all. He's a patriot. God bless him. But here's the point. He was never the end all be all. He was always a John the Baptist. He was always a prefigurement of what will come in the future. But people forgot that along the way. They thought we really were playing for like Heritage America and like whatever. Trump was a stepping stone towards America first, white identity, towards a true nationalism, true revanchism. He was always a stepping stone. He did his part. God bless him. He created me. He created so much of this, but he was never the end all be all. He's on his way out. We just need to be realistic about it and not in denial and not coping and not having these delusions that, you know, we have to wrest control over the ship from Trump using our Twitter accounts. It ain't going to happen. This is why I say the real battle is 2028. This administration's done. We got to get ready for 28 because that's the all-important battle. Who's going to win? Is it going to be Vance? Is it going to be Rubio? Or maybe it'll be somebody else. But we need to understand in 28 exactly what happened in 24. Here's a question. Do you think Vance will be any different? Do you think that J.D. Vance, who is a nobody, you think he'll be any different? Trump was this Herculean outsider. This is like a once-in-a-lifetime figure. Rich, billionaire, tough, brash. Changed the game forever with the force of his personality and charisma and perseverance. Like, let's not understate the magnitude of what Trump did in 2016 and what he even did in the past 10 years. And that's Trump. Who the fuck is J.D. Vance? Seriously, he's some dork talking about his meemaw because he sucked Peter Thiel's dick for 10 years because he got millions of dollars from Thiel and basically brown-nosed his way to the top because he flattered the idiot Don Jr. Because why? You think Vance is going to be any different? Trump couldn't make America great again, but Vance can. Trump, as unconventional, as dynamic, as earth-shattering as his victory was, he couldn't do it, but Vance can, with all of his experience doing what? Writing press releases for the Marines? All his experience doing what? Book talks at the Aspen Institute about hillbilly elegy? His experience doing what exactly? Giving speeches that suck? Written for him by his ghostwriters from the Thiel crew? I mean, seriously, you think Vance will be any different? He'll be the same or worse because he doesn't have it. He's another dork like DeSantis. If Trump couldn't do it, Vance definitely couldn't do it. It'll be worse. This is why I say we got to understand what we're playing for in 28. We're not playing to get screwed again. We're not going to fall for it again. This is why I want you to be demoralized. No, this administration's never going to work out. There's no plan. What do we do? There's nothing we can do. You already did the voting. You know, none of the talk shows want to tell you that because it's all about keeping everybody on the hamster wheel. So I'm going to be brutally honest. I want to demoralize you. It's over. There's nothing you can do for this administration. This administration's done. You'd be better off just expressing your discontent because at least maybe then they'll throw us a bone out of embarrassment, out of desperation. The only thing you could do is say, fuck this government. It's over. But trust me when I tell you, nothing good is going to come out of this in the next few years. This is cooked. here's the upside. Here's the Hail Mary. Here's the silver lining. You're not going to change the administration by tweeting. You're not going to convince Trump to do the right thing if Jack Posobiec puts out a hashtag. But what we can do is get ready for 28. Get ready to go to Iowa. Put yourself in a position politically, financially, get involved in politics. You've got 3 years, okay? The 2028 election is in 3 years. If you're in high school, going into college, get involved in college Republicans. Get involved in your Young Republicans, local Republican chapter. Get involved in a campaign. Where do you see yourself in 3 years? You want to be ready. You want to be ready in 2 years to get on a primary campaign, to get to Iowa, Iowa caucus, New Hampshire primary. You want to get ready if our guy wins the primary and the general to work in the administration. If you're in college already, join up with college Republicans. Get involved in a campaign. If you're just some regular guy, volunteer for a campaign. Get your money up. Put yourself in a position maybe where you're comfortable. You got a couple of years to get your money up, couple of years to network a little bit. And come 2027, I want to see you guys in Iowa. I want to see you guys in New Hampshire. I want to see you in Nevada and South Carolina. I want to see you on Super Tuesday. You got 2 years, okay? Make it count. Iowa caucus is January, February 2028. You got 2 whole years to get yourself situated. I'm not going to tell you, hey, everybody, if we all just say, please, Trump, like, that's over. We're not doing that. Climb the ladder. Get on the ladder. Start climbing. Get ready in 2 years. We're going to fight. If we don't get our way, get ready for 2032. This is never over. We're never giving up. We're never going to stop. People say, well, isn't it going to be too late? It doesn't. It's not over until we say it's over. Okay? That's the game. You know, look at Pat Buchanan. He ran in 1992. He didn't see his vision realized until 2016. 24 years later. Are you ready to go until 2040? Are you ready to go until 2050? You need to be. And that's what it takes. That's what it takes. Generational. And don't get me wrong, it'd be better if we could fix it sooner rather than later. But this is how we have to look at it. We have to want it more than they do. We have to show up. You know, who has the discipline to do this for 50 years? Who has the discipline? Who wants it bad enough? And by when I say to do this for 50 years, I don't mean go and vote every 2 years. I mean, who for 50 years has the dedication to say, I'm going to get to work every day to become rich. I'm going to get to work every day to become powerful. I'm going to get to work every day to become politically influential. In spite of every setback, doxing, personal stuff, whatever, I'm literally going to make the personal and the political one. That is who the future belongs to. Whatever the demographic composition of the country, whatever happens, that is how the future will be determined. So, I mean, what Trump did in 16, it's inspirational. But we have to move beyond the nostalgia and realize that it's on its way out. And now we need a new big idea. We need a new leader, new big idea, new movement. We got to get ready for it so we're better equipped for the next time around. You know, this time, like I said, this was like a big bang event. It created so much stuff, but it was sloppy. It was disorganized. There were some personality flaws. They weren't able to do the job. We got to be ready for the next go around.